Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 if you want to text us, or we'd like to hear from you on email, ray@rte.ie, anything that's on your mind. Yesterday we spoke to Coleman Nochter, and Coleman is a regular on the show. He's a child and adolescent psychotherapist, and yesterday we were talking about homeschooling. And it's an ongoing issue during lockdown, and some people are finding that it's okay, others are finding it very stressful, and they're very anxious around the whole thing. There was a post that Jenny spotted last night from a lady called Julia. We think she's American. And her seven-year-old, I think it's a boy, wrote this about homeschooling. So seven-year-old, remember it's a seven-year-old, and you can see it's written in pencil. Today is just another day in a long line of days. Staring at a dumb screen. Just boring, boring online school. That's the only thing that did happen. It's the only thing that is happening. That's the only thing that will happen. Wow. See, that's from a seven-year-old. Like, that's Beckett-like, isn't it? Waiting for homeschooling. And they've even put it on a T-shirt now. That's a lot of insight from a seven-year-old. And a lot of sadness as well. That's the unfortunate thing. But we will get there. And I was reading this morning in the papers that there's a phased opening of schools in March. That's what they're talking about. Starting with the youngest, who are finding homeschooling the most difficult. Then in secondary schools, it'll be the exam years. And then working towards, I suppose, first and second year eventually in TY. And that's the way they're planning to do it sometime in March. So we're seeing an end to it. Just hold on. Hold on in there. Trevor's been on to ray@rte.ie. He says, I was hoping you could pass on best wishes to our mother, Margaret Phillips. She's currently in the great hands of the staff of Waterford Regional Hospital for her third chemotherapy session for lymphoma. Margaret and her husband, Noel, were on the TV show back in 2017. You surprised them with a serenade by Dickie Rock. I remember that. Dickie flew back from Spain to serenade Margaret and Noel because it was their first dance. So he came back and sang it live, Candy Store on the Corner. It was her 50th wedding anniversary. Anyway, we were delighted to say that Mom is responding very well to treatment. She's in great spirits and listens into Radio 1 every day, even in hospital. Dad's keeping well and looking forward to welcoming Mom home in their cocoon in Castlecomer, County Kenny, later today, Wednesday. Maybe they'll have a dance if she's up to it. And that's from Trevor. And sincere thanks to wonderful frontline healthcare staff in Waterford. And I suppose you can expand that and say thanks to all the healthcare staff all over the country. And you saw that, you may have seen that primetime special on Monday night. I meant to mention to you, and I'll point you towards this. It's a difficult read, but in one of the supplements in The Guardian on Saturday, there was an excerpt from a book by an NHS doctor called Rachel Clark. And it's a real window into what it's like in ICU, in hospitals all over the world at the moment. Rachel Clark is her name. I'm sure if you Google it, you'll get the article. Powerful stuff and amazing writing. Now, PJ's been on. And yesterday we had Fionn O'Brien on, and he was on one of the various types of telecommunications devices we have at the moment, and it went down in the middle of the interview. Now, he was supposed to sing a song live, so I had none of his music on what they call the cart wall, and I picked out a Declan O'Rourke song to play sometime in the future. But anyway, yesterday had to play it because we didn't have Fionn on the line. So I played The Stars Over Kinvara, Declan O'Rourke, beautiful song from his current album. PJ was listening and he says, thank you for playing that Declan O'Rourke song yesterday afternoon. I had a major epiphany moment and cried like a baby during it and for a while after. My wife Mary died just over a year ago. Sorry to hear that, PJ. And when she completed her first treatment in summer 2019, we spent a beautiful mini break in Kinvara. I remember how full of hope we were in that languid, tranquil space. Sadly, Mary's cancer returned soon after, and she is very badly missed about the place, but most of all, in this heavy heart. My ability to grieve for her has been stymied by an impulse to be there for others, but yesterday the dam burst and I just couldn't stop. To say I felt better afterwards is an understatement, and I'll keep that song by Declan O'Rourke in my head till I meet her again. But also, it's fair to say her presence is all over the place. PJ. That's a lovely email. It's obvious how much you loved Mary and how much you miss her. And mind yourself, and that's, you know, it's I know it's a little bit glib, but they always say they bring you back to the safety announcements on an aeroplane. When it comes to the oxygen mask, apply your own first and then deal with the people around you. And I think that is true of grieving, that people feel they have to put on a show or do certain things for people around them when they should take care of themselves. Not to the exclusion of everybody else, but they should be aware that they have to mind themselves. We were talking this morning, various things come up on our Zoom call. One of them was a man who went on to a very serious Texas judge type court case Zoom call as a cat. We're going to be talking to him. But the other thing that came up was, and it's particularly about cities, probably not as much down the country, but there's a real sense of community happening in places that communities didn't exist before. Because you're in your 5K, you're using your local shop and your local butcher, and you're becoming familiar with your surroundings and with your neighbours and with the people in your neighbourhood. It sounds like I'm going to break into song now from Sesame Street. Who are the people in your neighbourhood? But, you know, Neil, for example, who lives inner city Dublin, he now goes down to his local coffee shop every day, has a chat with the man behind the counter. He knows his local butcher, the local shop, all that sort of thing. So that's another good thing that's coming out of all this, particularly in cities. There's a sense of community developing. The other things that people spot that you might be interested in, the remaking Wizard of Oz. Now, why would you mess with that? Perfection. Perfection. Everything about it. Like, I still get a little bit shivery when I see it. It's still a bit scary. But anyway, the people in Hollywood, in there, they think we should all see the Wizard of Oz remake. So they're making that. That's happening. Swans. There are more swans in Ireland now than ever before. Well, since records began. The 8th International Swan Census happened in January 2020. And we have a huge population of whooper swans in this country. The Buick swan looks set to become extinct, at least in Ireland alone. It's going to be lost from Ireland in the coming years, they say. So that's, it's good news for the whooper swan, not so good news for the Buick swan. Sales of Barbie, yeah, biggest ever. The most since 2014. 1.35 billion sales last year. That's so you wouldn't have associated the sales of Barbies with a pandemic. But there you go. There it is. Footwear. I talked about this before as well, that the sales of high heel shoes and high fashion shoes dipped during pandemic, and the sales of comfortable and healthy footwear went through the roof. And with that in mind, I see in one of the papers today that Birkenstock might be selling the company. So Birkenstock, you know, the sandals, the leather straps and the cork insoles and the rubber soles. Yeah, Birkenstocks. They're worth $4 billion, they reckon. Recently, Dr. Martens, as in Doc Martens, launched on the London stock market with a valuation of $3.7 billion. They sold 24 million pairs of Birkenstocks last year. They're made in Germany and there's still a connection to the original Mr. Birkenstock. He was a cobbler, Johann Adam Birkenstock. He founded the company in 1774 and currently brothers Alex and Christian Birkenstock are the people in charge, and all of the footwear are made in Germany. Now, I was just throwing this out in the office upstairs. I didn't realise that people felt so strongly about Birkenstocks. Everybody went, I wouldn't wear those. One person said that if my husband came home with a pair of Birkenstocks on, that'd be it. It'd be a deal breaker. Why so? I don't know. I find them very comfortable. Now, to be honest, I wasn't a fan all the way back 12 years ago or 13 years ago. My wife Jenny said, you should wear them, they're very comfortable. I said, I'm not really a Birkenstock person. Purchased them, had them for 10 years. And they became, you know, they became like second soles of your feet in a way, your soulmate, because they grow around you and they, you know, they mould around your foot. Very comfortable. Bought a second pair 2 years ago. I'll have them for another 10 years. They're an investment. But anyway, all the people I spoke to upstairs hate them. Hate them with a vengeance. They associate them with a certain type of person and they don't like that type of person. So there you go. So there's pro Birkenstocks and anti Birkenstocks, but they're enjoying a resurgence in popularity and value there at $4 billion. That's a lot of cash. Now, on this day, over the years, yes. Things happened on this day over the years. Yes, they did. And our David has put together 10 questions on events that happened on the 10th of February over the decades and the centuries. And we're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each on our quiz of today. Do, 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 do. And today's prize comes from the award-winning holistic Chaude Spa in Dunboyne Castle Hotel. You and a friend will enjoy an exclusive one-day spa retreat where you will select from their luxury spa treatments, including Voya and Image skincare facials, deep tissue massage and reflexology. You can take some time out and relax in the large hydrotherapy pool and afterwards enjoy afternoon tea in the luxurious surroundings of the 18th century Georgian formal sitting rooms. Sounds glorious. Find out more at dunboynecastlehotel.com. And if you want to come on and answer a couple of questions and have a chat after 4 o'clock, you have to answer our qualifying question first. And today's question is this: in which Irish county would you find the town of Navan, which is a palindrome? In which Irish county would you find the town of Navan? 1850 715 900. Isn't that odd the way the brain works? The first thing I think of when I hear a Navan is not that it's in County Meath or that old ad that used to have for a furniture shop an hour from Dublin. It's the fact that it's a palindrome. It's, and Hannah, if somebody's introduced me, Hannah, oh, your name's a palindrome. What are you talking about? How does your brain work? There you go. Anyway, 51551, ray@rte.ie. A bit of Pavarotti? Ah, yeah, why not? Hey, funiculi, funicula. Digwit, says somebody, greetings from lockdown London. Can you wish our mammy Bridget Barrett from Kildare a happy 95th birthday today? That's a brilliant age, isn't it? She's in our ladies' ward, St. Vincent's Hospital, Athy. And thanks to the wonderful staff in our ladies' ward, love from all our 11 children. Grimogat, that's Jacinta Barrett, Salahuddin. And happy birthday, Bridget. We were talking about all the bridges in Kildare last week. There's another one to the list. Saw three beautiful swans on my walk today at lunchtime. Two males vying for the attention of one female. Saw them in flight and they were beautiful, but I couldn't whip my camera phone out quick enough to capture the sight. Why don't you just look at it and enjoy it and commit it to memory? How about that? I love palindromes. The one associated with Napoleon Bonaparte I particularly like. Abel was I saw Elba. Aha. Because there are palindrome sentences as well, aren't there? Abel was I saw Elba. As in the island. I just bought my first pair of Birkenstock 2 weeks ago. Can't wait to wear them in the summer. All the young trendies, of which I'm not one, are wearing them. Tell your crew to get with it. I said, well, I wasn't going to argue because I'm not a trendy one. I'm not a trendy one. It's comfort every time for me. And they're very comfortable. So busy today, I've just realised I didn't clean my teeth. That's busy. This morning, homeschooling, work, etc. The only thing I can say is the love of my life still kissed me on the lunch break. Mustn't be too bad, says D. It's funny, D, because I had the same thought today, because sometimes it gets to lunchtime now because I'm working from home and I haven't brushed my teeth. I know that's terrible. Sometimes that happens. And I did remark that Jenny had come into the office, the home office, the spare room, and I was wondering, did my breath smell? So you were the same thing happened to you. Just to let you know, the Sanctuary Runners have now reached Asmara in Eritrea. They're virtually running from one end of Africa to the other. A quick chat to the lovely locals, and we'll be on our way shortly, soon into Sudan and 38 degrees heat. We can do this. 26,000 kilometres, no bother. Solidarity, friendship, respect. runthroughafrica@gmail.com. So that's, they're keeping us in touch there. Now, watch out for the cat puns here. Anyway, see if you can count them. A formidable lawyer by the name of Rod Ponton had a catastrophe on Zoom that has gone viral around the world. While working from home or from somewhere, it can't be perfect. Rod had an unfortunate incident when a kitten filter, that's the important thing, a kitten filter was left on a laptop. And he was left explaining to the judge on the call that he was not, in fact, a cat. But that he was Rod Ponton. Rod has lived to tell the tale and has taken a brief pause to talk to us today. How you doing, Rod? Meow.
Meow, meow. I'm doing great.
Rod, I'm not a great man for viral videos, but I think yours, well, not that you'd intended it to go viral or anything like that, but it's the best thing I've ever seen. I think it's definitely the best thing I've ever seen. So will you tell people what happened? You're a lawyer in Texas.
I'm a lawyer and I'm a county attorney, and I had to go to one of my remote towns, Presidio, for business yesterday. So I checked it on Zoom on my secretary's computer to attend to a Zoom hearing in district court. Of course, we're having all our court proceedings on Zoom. And everything was going fine until the judge called the case. And suddenly, when he called the case, my face on the video turned into a cat, to my great surprise. And everybody has seen the video now. They saw me struggling to try to figure out how to take the mask filter off, which I didn't know how to do.
Yeah, because you're a man of a certain age.
I'm a man of a certain age. I'm not a young kid that could have done it in a heartbeat.
Yes, yeah.
And so it's an example of the struggles I think all of us have had trying to keep up with technology during the COVID and all these things.
Well, can I just explain to people, Rod, that it was a brilliant filter because it's so lifelike. And then you are looking at yourself on your laptop or your assistant's laptop, you see that you have a cat face on, which is, it looks so real. It looks so real. And then you can see your eyes in shock looking down at the keyboard to see if you can press some button to get this cat face off your own face.
I think that's why I had to tell the judge that I'm not a cat, because the cat was responding the same way I was, would have been if I'd been on the video.
Yeah, that's the quote of the century. That's the quote of the lockdown, isn't it?
It is.
So what exactly did you say? You said, I have it here somewhere. I'm here live. I'm not a cat.
That's what I told him, because I told him I was ready to go forward at the hearing with the cat video. But thankfully, we figured it out and I was able to continue the hearing with my old boring face.
Yeah. What sort of reaction have you got? Family and friends, what do they think?
They all love it. Everybody, you know, it's for some reason it struck a nerve or hit a funny bone around the world, because I think everybody needed to take a pinprick to all the tension we've had, and I think this made everybody laugh after the tough year we've had.
If I can
laugh at my expense, I'll take it.
That's isn't that brilliant? Well, what a lovely thing to be involved in, because like the work you do is serious work.
It is.
And we're in the middle of this horrible, you know, global pandemic. And then in the middle of it all, a simple little filter that's a 10-year-old thing on some old Dell laptop or something like that, that you can't even get anymore. And that just, as you say, it sort of bursts the little anxious, stressful balloon that we're all living in. What a beautiful thing. What a beautiful thing. So what's your next act? What are you going to do next?
I don't know what my next act's going to be. It's going to be hard to top this one. It's 12 million YouTube views, and Zoom stock went up 5% or $19 yesterday afternoon.
Did they? Listen, I tell you what, we have a contact. The financial, is it the financial advisor with Zoom, is an Irishman. We've spoken to him on the show. So if it went up 5% as a result of your kitten filter, you should be in for what? 1% of that? That's a lot of cash.
Well, I don't know if it was because of me or not, but I'll take credit for it.
take credit for it. Yeah. Watched it last night beside my sleeping husband. I laughed so loudly I woke him up. It was pure brilliance, says Catherine. And Ray, the cat was looking for his mouse on the keyboard. Hey!
It was.
Yes, there you go. Isn't that brilliant? Yeah. I bet Rod is feline a bit foolish. Hey!
I am.
Feline a bit foolish. Rod, I just want to say a huge thank you on behalf of the 10 million people who've watched it and the millions of people who are going to watch it, because you've just brightened up our world. So, Rod Ponton.
Thank you very much for reaching out to me.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody can laugh with me.
Well, that's what they're laughing with you. Thanks, Rod. Have a good day.
You too.
See you. Bye. Bye. That's brilliant, isn't it?
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, last week we spoke to Connor, who was one of the seven young men on Davy's toughest team. And when I was doing a bit of research around Connor, I watched him talk to the two Norries on their podcast. And I'd sort of half heard of the two Norries podcast, but when I watched it, I said, we have to talk to those two guys. And the two Norries are James Leonard and Timmy Long. And they're on the line now from Cork. Hello, James.
Hi, Ray. What's the crack?
It's good. And how are you, Timmy?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
So you're in separate rooms in a house somewhere and you're talking to us there, and get the phone right up to your mouths if you would, lads.
Yeah, great.
Because I know you're very casual in the way you approach the podcast, and you sit back in the lovely soft chairs, which gives it a, an atmosphere, which is very special. And I'll just tell people, the two Norries podcast.com. So, James, I'll go to you first. Yourself and Timmy, well, you would have been friends with Timmy's younger brothers, but you were brought up in the same part of North Cork City.
That's right, yeah. We're from a place called Ardcullen, yeah, which is on the north side of Cork City, northwest. And Timmy is a few years older than me, I like to remind him. And I would have grown up with his younger brothers, but obviously I would have known Timmy for all my life too, you know.
Yeah.
And we're only from a few doors away from each other, and our mothers would have been friends also.
Right. And your lives have taken a similar enough path.
Yeah, a very destructive one, I suppose, and then a very positive one afterwards. You know, we've both, while we have very different stories, we would have both ended up in addiction and the criminal justice system. And then we both kind of found our way out of it and kind of built lives for ourselves through education.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Because you've studied, what's your degree?
I have a bachelor's degree in youth and community work and a master's in criminology from UCC.
Right, and you're considering doing a PhD around what?
That's right. Well, I started a PhD in October. It was around how people in recovery and assisting from crime use education to reintegrate.
Hmm.
But I've put it on hold for the time being just because I've been busy with my job and the podcast's kind of taken off.
Before I get to Timmy, can I ask you a big question then, James? Because so you have insight, I suppose, because you've read the literature.
Mm.
Insight into what happened in your life, and you can look at it now because you're in recovery for a number of years from a bit of a distance. So,
yeah.
So how would you explain it to an alien?
Well, I think if you look at the prison population and you look at the people accessing treatment for addiction, they tend to be from certain areas in certain parts of the city, you know, and that's not a coincidence. So I think there is a link between offending behaviour and alcoholism and addiction and socioeconomic deprivation. Also, then there's childhood traumas that you're more likely to experience when you're from socioeconomically deprived area. So I think general inequality plays a big part in all of this, right?
Yeah. And Timmy and you used that phrase, which I only copped the real meaning of at the end of last year. I don't know what I was thinking, but getting out of your head. So Timmy, that's what you wanted to do as soon as you can from a very young age, was to get out of your head.
Yeah, it was just, I wasn't able to deal with all the different forms of emotions and stuff that were going on for me. It was basically unbearable to manage. So when I came across solvents at a young age, they took me completely away from all the madness, all the thinking, all the negative thinking, all the thinking that you're no good, all the different stuff you go through as a young person, trying to fit in and all this. But when I came across the solvents and stuff at the age of 10, 11, that it worked for me like a miracle. I just felt all that madness that was going on in my head it just stopped. And it was like I was after finding something that I was looking for, and it worked.
And where did that madness come from? Like, so you were the eldest of three boys, your parents separated.
My mother brought up three boys on her own. You know, there was a lot of mental health. She suffered with her mental health as well. You know, she had her own stuff going on for her.
Mm.
And then she had three young kids as well that she had to deal with. And there would have probably been underlying issues with one or two of us as well, you know, ADHD and other things, you know, because we were quite lively as young boys as well. And it was difficult. We really had to fend for ourselves, if that's the right word to say. You know, we had to, like, there wasn't much teaching us how to live or how to manage life or how to cope with emotions and feelings. So it that kind of went into our teens then, and we just became out of control because we didn't know how to behave.
Mm.
You know, crime was in our lives, and drugs and alcohol was a massive part of our lives as well. And it basically, I've often said this, and I've said it on the podcast many times, that alcohol and drugs basically would have probably saved my life as a young person. because with the, my mental health was so poor at the time, and I felt so negatively about myself that maybe suicide would have been something I would have contemplated many, many times as a young person as well, you know.
So the drugs and the alcohol, it sort of numbed you to reality.
It blocked everything out. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, people have to understand that, don't they, when they're when they're looking at people's lives.
Like, there's many people probably listening to this now right at the moment, and they can relate to exactly that, you know. You don't realise it at the time. It's not till you get into recovery and you can look back at your life in hindsight and understand how alcohol and drugs did save your life in one respect, but towards the end, it nearly killed me as well.
Yeah.
You know, it brought me to a really dark place. The amounts of alcohol and drugs that I was using at the time was enough to kill somebody that would have tried it for the first time.
And both yourself and James say, and this is, to a lot of people, this is going to sound very strange, that prison was nearly aspirational for you. You know,
it was like a breath of fresh air, really.
Right.
You know, I'd say if I was in an early recovery in prison, I don't know, would I have probably came as far as I have today.
Yeah.
You know, because when I went in there, I got all the help that I needed. I connected with a counsellor straight away, a drug counsellor. I got involved with the prison psychologist. I used the AA meetings in the prison. I used the school to educate myself. And it's very important for somebody in early recovery to keep themselves busy. And what I mean by that is keeping yourself out of your thinking mind, you know, if you're caught up in your thinking mind and you're not busy, if you're bored or whatever, you're actually moving towards a relapse.
And James, because you studied criminology, it's like you describe it, I think I heard you describe it, or maybe I read it in an interview, that it's nearly rites of passage in certain areas, going to prison, that's sort of the same way as certain tribes jump over cows in Africa. Going to prison in certain areas is like, now I'm a man.
Yeah, well, when you put it like this, Ray, there's nobody from our estate working in RT, and there's no Gardaí living in our estate, or teachers, or doctors, or vets, or anything like that. So you've very limited role models then. And the people that myself and Timmy used to look up to that had status was when we were younger, was the joyriders, the drug dealers, and the drug users. They were the people, they were all role models, you know. So when you're growing up in an area or an environment like that, going to prison is a very normal thing. It's not a very deviant thing to do. Whereas if you're from a more middle class or well-to-do area, going to prison would bring huge shame on the family. But in our area, yeah, it still might have brought some shame. But you have to remember, when I first went into prison in 2004, 2005, I was shocked by how many people from my local area was actually in there. And the whole A3 landing was all Knocknaheeny and Holly Hill. And if you look at other landing, it was all travellers. Another landing was all African, Romanian. And if you think about it, they're the most marginalised people and the prison environment is a microcosm of wider societal inequalities. And I keep on bringing up inequalities, but that's what it's about, really, I think.
Yeah. But I suppose there are people who were from the same estate as you two who didn't end up in prison, didn't end up being addicted to drugs. Is that fair to say?
There's people from my family that lived under the same roof as me that didn't do any of that as well.
How do you explain that? Is it just personal differences, is it?
Let's say, in psychology, they say it's not about the event, it's how it's perceived by the individual, you know? And we perceive things differently. And under the one roof, siblings can go through the same environment but have different outcomes because they perceive it differently. In different houses in the same estate, those perceptions can be even wider. And there's people in our area that do very well. Do you know, most people in our area don't go to prison, but there's a very significant amount that do. Yeah. And the statistics and all the negative statistics were way overrepresented in all of those statistics.
Yeah. You describe, you know, the slippery slope into addiction. Like you had Thirsty Thursdays where you had a few cans with the lads, and then heroin was introduced during the boom times, and then it became Tinfoil Thursday, and it was still a social thing at the beginning where you gathered around a bonfire and did heroin together, and then the slippery slope happens very quickly, doesn't it, that you're addicted and you become what they become paranoid, you don't want to share, is that it, or what happens?
Well, it was around the economic downturn around, I suppose there's a few reasons why heroin became big in Cork. It hadn't been a prevalent issue in Cork like it was in Dublin. I think around 2004-2005 Spike Island prison closed, and a lot of the young lads that would have been there would have went to St. Patrick's, Mountjoy. I think they might have picked up the habit, the connections brought them back to Cork. Then we had a recession 2006-2007, and when people that didn't have the money to emigrate, they were left with feelings of worthlessness, joblessness, and this rise in heroin, I suppose, a perfect storm for addiction, and we were caught up in that. And yeah, it was introduced, I suppose, foolishly or naively, we thought that by smoking it was a more harmless, non-addictive way of doing it, but and all the social side of it, then as the addiction progressed, you start breaking away from your friends, you become increasingly isolated, the smoking turns into injecting, the family breakdown, there's no employment, there's no crack in it, there's no, and it just becomes very isolating. And once you're using intravenously like that, then overdoses become frequent, and then you become increasingly desperate to get money, and you become theft, and you're getting arrested for possession of drugs. And I suppose a lot of the time, a judge would have sent me to prison, and it would probably save my life at the time, because my physical state at that time would have been very desperate, you know. So I often say, do you know what? Prison at times actually kept me alive, you know, because I'm able to regenerate in there.
And Timmy, and this may not be fair, but you were sort of a major player, were you, in drug dealing in Cork at a certain stage? I'm not saying that's like it's not a badge of honour or anything, it's just a fact.
Yeah, you know, listen, Back in the day, you know, I was probably always somebody that was competitive. Maybe I played a bit of football as well, and I was competitive on the field. You know, being involved in drugs, I was trying to make as much as I possibly could to feed all the different habits I had. A gambling addiction, a drug addiction, alcoholism, you know, and basically nearly everything that I was making was gone on them, and whatever was left over was being spent stupidly, you know, and just silly things, you know. But at the end, it just brought me to my knees, where I was just penniless, basically. I was after losing everything, you know. My partner at the time, and the mother of my two kids, she wouldn't have been able to handle any more of it, you know, because I was out of control, chaotic, you know. I was capable of doing anything because I didn't value my own life or anything at the time, and I was willing to do absolutely anything. So, yeah, if you wanted to say that, once upon a time, you know, I would have been involved in the drug trade in the city, you know, but it's not something that I'd say proudly.
No,
you know?
No, of course not. There must have been moments when you feared for your life, not because of drugs, but because of situations you found yourself in.
Of course, many times, you know, but at the time, I really didn't see a life after 30. I thought I'd be dead by the age of 30 years of age because of the amount of crime that I was involved in and the amount of drugs that I was putting into my system. Sometimes I'd be using drugs and I'd be wishful that I wouldn't be waking up.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, and I would have had kids at the time as well. You know, there was an article a number of years ago, I seen it in prison, and it resonated with me brilliantly. It was Paul McGrath said something on the front of the News of the World paper. He said, when I was drinking, like I actually didn't even care about my kids. You know, and I could understand exactly what he meant, because I didn't really care about anything else once I had a drink or a drug in my system, you know. Once I wasn't feeling any emotions or feeling in general, you know, I just wanted to be out of my head constantly. But towards the end, I I nearly lost everything that I really valued. You know, my now wife was at the end of her tether, really. She was willing, she just wanted it out. She wanted out because I was out of control. And I would have brought a lot of guards to the door, and I would have been arguing with different people. And, you know, it wasn't fair on her, but I'm fortunate that
she
stuck by me, you know. And I always mention this, always, and she's probably listening now, more than likely she is.
And what do you think she saw in you that you didn't see in yourself?
Well, I personally, on a personal level back then, I would have never said I saw any good in myself, you know, because I was listening to somebody speak there lately, a guy by the name of Gabor Mate, and he speaks about addiction brilliantly, and he just said, like, if when you're a young child and there's different things going on in the household and parents are fighting and all these different things, like, a child is going to blame themselves for all the arguments and all this going on in the house. And that's something I carried with me in my whole life. I always thought I was bad, or I was after doing something wrong, you know. And I just felt like that my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I would have never had any value in myself until I started to understand and research the way I felt and why I became addicted to alcohol and drugs and gambling and other stuff. You know, I speak about all the different stuff on the podcast, that even eating disorders that I would have had, you know. So I'm just blessed. I'm just one of these people that's truly blessed to have somebody in my life like my wife, Nicole, because... and, you know, listen, if I heard a fella speak like this on a national radio while I was in addiction, like, I would have said, what a pussy, basically, you know. But, like, we have to be honest, you know. I'd be very, very honest, and I'd give my wife all the credit for it, because at the end of the day, she would have been the person that her and my two kids, she would have been the person that I fought addiction for, brilliant. Because... I wouldn't have done it for myself, because I had no love for myself or anything like that, right. You know.
James, there's a lovely vulnerability about the two E, and it's not a contrived vulnerability, and that's important. And then that means you get the best out of the people you speak to.
Yeah, exactly. And because we leave ourselves vulnerable, it encourages others. I think that, like, for where myself and Timmy is from, and the dark places we've been, there's a facade that a man has to be a certain, you know. A man can't show any sign of weakness, a man can't be emotional or soft, but all those things keep you in the negative lifestyle, you know. And just to be able to open up and leave yourself vulnerable, that's how people get growth and build relationships and stuff like that. But yeah, I know it's a hard thing to do, and I had to do a lot of therapy in treatment centre to get to that place. But yeah, it's just about becoming comfortable in your own skin. And when I'm talking there, and it might come across to people that haven't heard us before, or they're making excuses and they're blaming traumas and economic deprivation. It's not about blaming anything, and we always say that in the podcast. It's about understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you can move on, you know. And like, I've learned a lot through academia, lectures, and going to conferences, and having all these great people teach me. And I suppose the podcast now allows us to bring all those topics and knowledge and kind of bring a mainstream to people that wouldn't have the privileges we have from the comfort of their home for free.
Yeah. And breaking the cycle, James, because you're there in the middle of it, between two generations of people from the same place. Are people breaking the cycle?
I think they are. I think there's a growing recovery movement in Cork, and I think in Dublin also, and I can't speak for the rest of the country, but there's a growing recovery movement, and I think recovery now is something that it's not seen as, oh, he's an alcoholic or he's an addict. It's, you know what, that's what I used to be, but I'm having my best life today. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make recovery more visible and promote it, to attract people in, as opposed to going around preaching. So you can tune in if you want that. If you don't want that, that's your own problem.
The two Norris.
We get people contacting us. Get people contacting us daily, and we can signpost help for them.
Yeah. Timmy, I'll have one sugar in mine, please. Thanks there. He seems to be making a cup of tea.
Yeah.
like yeah. what you, both you've done with your lives is amazing. And we can't go into the full detail of this, but I think people get the idea. We're addicted, crime, prison, and now out the other side. And Timmy, like you discovered that you had dyslexia, you couldn't do the alphabet when you were in your mid-30s. You learnt it in prison. And then you went on to get a degree in construction management. And that's where you're at now, along with the podcast. So what's the plan?
The plan at the moment, like, I really don't want to see another book, to be honest with you, because if I looked at another book now these days, I'd probably get anxiety or get a panic attack. And, you know, I'm done with that for the time being. So I just want to start building a business myself and start providing for my family and be part of my community and society, you know. It's just all that stuff feels right, you know, before, as James had mentioned earlier, you know, and this is the way the saying goes, monkey see, monkey do. Like, we were looking at the older boys in our area doing what they were doing and having nice clothes and stuff, and that's what we wanted, that's what we knew. We knew nothing else, and that was the way to make a few quid. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, it's to live an honest life and be a role model for my own kids and show them what it's like to be somebody that works hard and provides for their family. And and that's all I want, you know. That's all I want, and I just want to be able to help as many people as I can. You can't help everybody, but that's why we started the podcast, to be able to get as many stories as possible onto the podcast, so it would a lot of different people would be able to relate to it in different ways, and it seems to be doing exactly what we aim to do from the beginning.
Brilliant.
So going back to what you said, I went off on a tangent there. I'm in the process of starting my own business at the moment. It's a property maintenance company, and I'm hoping to employ people that are in early recovery and would have struggled to get jobs, you know, because of their criminal records and stuff like that. My aim is to employ them.
Okay.
And leave them feel comfortable in an environment where they can just work and talk to people that had similar backgrounds to them and experiences, and that's my main goal now at the moment, is to build that.
Just before I let the two of you go, there's a lot of talk about an attitude of gratitude now, and do you feel, James and Timmy, James first, that do you wake up every day and think you're lucky? Despite what you've been through, do you think you're lucky?
Yeah, just before I answer that, we're in an office space at the moment, and the walls are like paper, and there's somebody next door to us having a tea party, so apologies if you can hear them. But yeah, Ray, like, when you've come from the gutter, and I've, like, at the end of my addiction, I had not, and none of my family weren't around me because I had isolated myself from them. I hadn't worked for years. I'd no experience, qualifications, or work history or anything like that. My basic needs were, I didn't know if they were going to be met from day to day. So the life I'm living today, I wake up and I'm grateful every day. You know, I have a beautiful wife. I have a good job at the Cork ETB. The podcast recently joined Tortoise Shack, and some of the best podcasts in Ireland are there. And we're growing all the time, you know. So yeah. I'm doing things today I couldn't have dreamed of doing. So I'm eternally grateful. And when I'm grateful for my life, you know, just good things just seem to happen for me organically.
And Timmy?
No, I feel completely blessed, you know, to have came through that life that I lived before, and to still have a family, because a lot of people, they don't have anything really to come out of prison to or anything like that, or when they come out of addiction. But every morning I thank, I feel very, very grateful for everything that I have, even my health, you know, and my mental health, which was very, very bad a number of years ago, has gotten better, and I'm able to deal with stuff. I feel blessed. I feel really, really blessed that I got a second chance in life, you know, and I'm using my second chance to the best of my ability. And I'm just learning every day. Yeah. I'm learning how to be a father, how to be a partner, a husband, a friend, you know, and I just want to continue with that and just keep progression with the podcast and everything else.
Well, thanks so much, lads, for taking time out to talk to us today. The Two Norries podcast is available on Spotify and every place you get your podcast. And you can see the lads as well. It's up on YouTube. The lads are a credit to themselves. I myself am 58 and I'm in recovery for 16 years. Each day is a new day outside my head. It's the only way to be living rather than existing. Well done, lads. One day at a time. There's always hope and help out there, says Pat. And I feel such gratitude to Timmy for working so hard and sharing his experience. I wish him and his family happiness for the future. So there you go. James Leonard, Timmy Long, Two Norries, thanks very much. Mind yourselves, lads.
Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, is the answer, Sarah. Now, last week we were talking about the fact that this is going to be a year of staycations. Leah Varadkar, Taoiseach, said that we won't be doing international travel this summer. So we're all going to be staying at home. And it got us talking about the greenways. And we wanted to know more about the greenways. So on the line we have Dr. Damien O'Toole, the National Cycling Coordinator with Cyclist.ie and Antashka. How are you doing, Damien?
Good afternoon, Ray, and keeping well, thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. Now, I know there's a bigger story around cycling, but what we're interested in talking to you today, because of staycations, directing people towards greenways that exist at the moment. So yep. What was the first greenway in Ireland and how did it come about?
Well, probably the best known biggest greenway was probably the Westport to Newport to Mulroney, Ackle one.
Yeah.
It's 42 kilometres long, was opened in 2010. And a few years later, we had the Waterford to Dungarvan one, which is slightly longer at 46 kilometres. But we also have the Great Southern Trail from West Limerick in Kerry. And I think work started on that even earlier. And with a lot of these greenways, it was disused railway lines. And really the essence of a greenway is that you're using a towpath or a droveway or a path alongside a river or a canal. So there's a historical dimension to it. And really the best greenways, you know, you have a good mixture of scenery, you know, maybe alongside the river, alongside the coast, you're in cuttings, you're up on viaducts, you're going through tunnels, and the more variety, the better. From my perspective.
Okay.
So they're some of the earliest ones and we've a whole torrent of them coming on stream.
Yeah, give us an idea of the ones that are in production, so to speak.
Well, under construction at the moment, we've New Ross to Waterford City. And that'll run through part of Kilkenny and end up in Waterford. And that will connect, of course, with the Waterford to Dungarvan Greenway.
So how long will that be then? How long will that be when it's finished from New Ross to Dungarvan?
That'll be 24 kilometres long into Waterford City.
And then 45.
Then there's four really interesting cross-border schemes. There's ones in Carlingford to Newry. There's the Ulster Canal Greenway. We've ones in Derry to Buncrana. Around then another one, Lifford to Strabane. So there's a bunch of cross-border schemes and then there's a lot of work happening along the Grand Canal in County Offaly. Offaly County Council are doing work down there and there's the upgrading of the Great Southern Trail.
Right.
So there's actually a lot of schemes. There's a lot of schemes happening at the moment, Ray, so it's quite exciting.
And Damien, the Eurovelo 1 and 2, tell us about them.
Yeah, the Eurovelo routes, these are concepts of the European Cyclist Federation. They're long-distance transcontinental cycling routes. There's 17 of them altogether in Europe. Two of them come through Ireland. Eurovelo 2 goes from Moscow all the way across the continent to Dublin and on to Galway and ultimately on to Clifton. That's Eurovelo 2. And then Eurovelo 1 goes from Norway through Scotland, through Ireland, right down the west coast, the south coast, over to Rosslare and then continues on down to France and Portugal. And the idea is that these are high quality routes. They'll bring visitors over from abroad, but with their staycation the year ahead of us, we expect a lot of visitors to be using them. And a lot of locals as well, local communities benefiting from them. So there's a lot of people who benefit from the greenways, not just people who travel on their special bicycles from afar. So,
yeah, and Damien, just
with buggies, people in wheelchairs.
Yeah, just on, there's a bit of a delay.
Sorry, Ray,
sorry for cutting across you there, there's a bit of a delay. But just on those Eurovelo ones, are they on road or off road routes? And are they in construction or what's the plan?
Yeah, they're a mixture. You know, ideally you aim for as much, you know, traffic free, motor traffic free routes as possible. But it does also include, we have a rich We have a rich network of quiet, lightly trafficked rural roads as well. So it does include those as well when they're properly signposted and, you know, you bring in appropriate lower safer speed limits and get the community on board. And you've, you know, all of the good ancillary infrastructure, picnic tables, signage, you know, places to recharge e-bikes, cycle-friendly accommodation. So you have all of the supporting infrastructure as well. And in the case of the Dublin to Galway route, most of it is in place, really from Maynooth right up to Longford. That's 130 kilometre long section, which is opening this year. And at the moment, there's a consultation process out for the section from Athlone right into Galway. There's five different route options which are out for consultation at the moment.
It's all very exciting.
It'll be a mixture of using state lands, and it's all very exciting, absolutely.
Yeah. And final question for you. Is there one person or one body responsible for all these greenways, or is it ad hoc?
It's mainly the 31 local authorities in Ireland, with funding coming from the Department of Transport. But then there are other bodies like Sport Ireland who maintain a national trails register, which is well worth checking out. And then on the civil society side, we've Antashka and cyclist.ie, and we're a federation of 25 groups who are pushing for lots of good quality schemes. So the main player, though, are the local authorities who are developing them, bringing them through planning and designing them and so forth.
Okay. Damien, we didn't have much time today and there was a delay. So when we get to the other side of this, I'd love to have you in studio and have a longer chat about cycling in Ireland and the future and all that. But for the moment, Dr. Damien O'Toole, Gura Margaret. Thank you.
Tweet at Radio Ray RTE, The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, an Aishtosh and the Free Skelton in Oakdale, caught to Wallish. Gramaga caught, thank you very much. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. On Timmy and James, what amazing lads, such honesty and compassion and a wish to help others through their experience. May you both stay strong, brave and kind. That's Tanya from Cork to the two lads. And on Birkenstocks, my friend wears his Birkenstock flip-flops all during winter. Brr, much to the amusement of neighbours, says Mick. And the Napoleon palindrome was, able was I ear, I saw Elba. Meaningless otherwise. You're right, Michael, Dublin 12. And then somebody else points that out. Mick, he says, the palindrome associated with Napoleon was able was I ear, I was Elba, because he was exiled there. Yes, of course, it's highly unlikely he said it because he spoke French and not English. So there. Right, press that button and we'll get on with things. Yep. It's time for our quiz of today. Great prize this week. It comes from the award-winning Holistic Showed Spa in Dunboyne Castle Hotel. It's a friend and yourself one-day spa retreat with everything that goes along with it. You can find out more at dunboynecastlehotel.com. And Breda Jacobs would like to be heading along there. How are you doing, Breda?
I'm fine, thank you.
Now, Breda, I always say the name of your village town wrongly, and I guess, is it Owlert or Oulart?
It's Owlart.
Owlart, you see, there you go.
Yeah, and it means the same as Owlart and Oulart. It means an apple orchard.
Oh, it's an all right, Oul, as in U for the LL. I guess.
The older word for an Oul was Owl, A-B-H-A-L-L.
Aha, I didn't know that, but you know that because you used to be a primary school teacher.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. How long are you retired?
About 10 years.
Right, and how is that going for you?
Oh, it's lovely. I loved working, but I enjoy retirement as well. I have lots of interests.
Great. What are they, do you mind me asking?
Well, I love reading. I love watching films. I love walking and exercise. I love sport. I used to participate a lot in sport, but now I'm a spectator of whether it's on television or in real life. So I love listening to music. So I'm never tired. Yeah. And of course, I love being with my grandchildren as well.
How many grandchildren have you got, Breda?
I have three, two boys and a girl.
Yeah, and when have you seen them last?
Well, I have seen MJ and Ella, it's Christmas since I saw them. I went over to see what they got from Santa Claus.
Right.
And Sean lives closer to us. My husband's a farmer and Sean is living with my son Michael and his wife on the farm. So they are more or less in our bubble.
Uh-huh.
So I have seen Sean a little more often. I don't see him very often, but I have seen him a few times.
You're a busy woman. There's a lot going on in your life.
I'm a busy woman, but that's the way I love it, Ray.
Yeah, great, great, brilliant. By coincidence, you're up against another primary school teacher. Colin Gibson is in Cork City. How are you doing, Colin?
Hi there, Ray. How are you?
Good. You haven't retired yet. You're working from home.
I am.
Now, are you of the Zoom type, or are you of the pre-recorded type, or what sort of school?
Pre-recorded. Seesaw videos and work, assigning work, first class.
Right. Is that, like, I always prefer live myself, because when you start pre-recording something, you go, oh, I'll do that again, and then I'll do it again, and then it's take 71, and you're getting very tired, and it's highly unlikely that you're going to get a good take anyway.
Well, I don't even look back at mine. I just
do, you not? Right.
Do it once. And
right, you're a one-take wonder, are you?
Yeah, that's what they expect anyway from being in class with me.
All right, okay. Well, no, that's Mr. Gibson, on form there. So it's,
exactly,
it's first class.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard that. Do you think one of your first class students could write something like that? I read it at the top of the show. Today is just another day in a long line of days, staring at a dumb screen, just boring, boring, boring online school. That's the only thing that did happen. It's the only thing that is happening. That's the only thing that will happen.
Well, that's impressive. I'd say that one or two might be able for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's very strong, isn't it? It's
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. What's the family story at home?
I'm here with my fiance and my youngest daughter, who's eating a phone at the moment.
I just
had a long walk, and I'm just going to get down to Seesaw in a minute. And
what age is your daughter?
She's 9 months.
Ah,
Katie.
Ah, lovely. Yeah.
She's moving on to a rice cracker now. So.
Is she? Right. And I've said this to a number of people, but, you know, one of the positives for you as a relatively new dad to your youngest daughter is that you've more time.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, which is...
It'll be a bit of a shock whenever we both go back.
It will be, yeah. Okay, it's Breda against Colin, Wexford versus Cork. Good luck to you both. Five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If we have a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Here we go. Breda, first question for you. On this day in 1824, Simon Bolivar was named president by the Congress of Peru. On what continent would you find Peru?
It's in South America.
It is, Breda. Colin, on this day in 1931, New Delhi became the capital of India. On what continent would you find India?
Asia.
Correct. Breda, second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
Strong, handsome, face of a leader.
Does Arthur look like a king or what?
Sorry.
Oh, did you just say you were looking for Arthur?
That information is on a need-to-know basis.
It's top secret. Hushity hush.
Now, on this day in 2008, at the 61st BAFTAs, the third installment in that animated film series was nominated for Best Animated Film. Can you name the franchise?
Pixar?
No, Pixar are the people who make them. You're in the right ballpark, but I need the name of a movie.
Toy Story?
No, that was an answer yesterday. It's Shrek. Nearly there. Okay. Colin, your second question is naughty one. Have a listen to this.
I think it's beautiful.
It's almost perfect.
Almost.
Yes, give it more rock and roll.
Right, I'm always up for that.
Put your body into it.
Right, okay. Put my body into it. I got it.
Not like that.
No, I got it. A bit more soul.
A bit more heart.
On this day in 2019, at the 72nd BAFTAs, Rami Malek won a Best Actor... Won a Best Actor Award for his role as the lead singer of which band in Bohemian Rhapsody?
That'd be Queen.
It would be Queen. Right, Breda. On this day in 1890, Boris Pasternak, poet and author of Dr. Zhivago, was born. What nationality was Boris Pasternak? Was he Russian or German?
He was Russian.
Correct. Colin, on this day in 1957, Laura Ingalls Wilder, author of Little House on the Prairie, died at the age of 90. What nationality was she, American or Canadian?
Oh, God. That's what I do. I'll go with American.
Correct answer. You're on three, Breda, you're on two. Your fourth question, Breda, is another audio one. Have a listen to this. They try to make me go to rehab, I say no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, And this day in 2008 at the 50th Grammy Awards, that song won Record of the Year. Can you name the singer?
Amy Winehouse?
It's the correct answer. Well done, Brita. Colin, have a listen to this. But I said fire to the rain. Watch it pour as I touch your face. When it burn, will I cry? Cause I heard it screaming out your name. On this day in 2013 at the 55th Grammy Awards, the singer, that singer won Best Solo Performance with that song. Can you name the singer?
My fiance thinks it's Adele.
It is. Your fiance is correct. Okay. Now, Colin, you're on 4. Clean sheet. Breeda, you're on 3. So you need to get this one right to be in with a chance, Breeda. If you get it right and Colin gets his final question incorrect, we're into a tiebreak situation. Good luck with this. On this day, in 60 AD, St. Paul is thought to have been shipwrecked at Malta. What we want to know is, what's the current population of Malta? Is it 0.5 million, 1.5 million or 2.5 million? So is it half a million, 1.5 million or 2.5 million?
I'd say 500,000.
You'd say right. That's the correct answer. 500,000. So you're on 4. You can't do anything else, Breeda. Well done on all that. Colin, you're on 4 too, but you have your final question in hand. Get this right and you're today's winner. Get it wrong, we go to a tiebreak situation. Good luck. On this day in 1929, Hallgeir Brendan, Norwegian Olympic gold medalist in 1952 and 1956, was born. What we want to know is the current population of Norway. Is it 5 million, 10 million or 15 million?
It's closer to 5 million.
So you're going to go, you're going with 5 million?
Yeah.
Okay. 5 million is the correct answer.
Oh, thank you.
Breeda, Shrek let you down today. You did really well, apart from that. We're going to send you out a Ray... We're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Very good, and congratulations to the column, okay?
Yeah, and lovely talking to you, Breeda. Mind yourself, stay safe.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Good bye. Bye. That's Breeda down in Owlart in County Wexford. Colin, well done.
Brilliant, thanks very much. I'm delighted with that.
Yeah, so yourself and a person of your choosing are off to the...
It would have to be Susie.
Yeah, Dunboyne Castle Hotel for a day in the Shode Spa.
And lovely. Brilliant.
You can find out more about it at dunboynecastlehotel.com. Well done, Colin.
Thanks so
Mind
much,
yourself. Ray. See you. Bye. Thank bye, you. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, great to hear about the new greenways. Every single town and village in Ireland should have safe, high-quality bike routes linking schools and GAA pitches and sports clubs. Great for kids and adults and tourism too. There's a statistic there, Holland versus Ireland. I think Holland has over 40% of journeys are made on bicycles. And the statistic from Ireland is 2%. 2% of journeys in Ireland are made on bicycles. A lot of work to do. Lewis Capaldi. Before you go on RT Radio 1, 5 on 5 on Ray at RT.ie. Our friends in social have asked us to tell you about a competition. It's not really a competition. All you have to do is go over to their Instagram page. That's at RT Radio 1. And if you click on and do what you're told, you're in with a chance of winning €750 worth of home gym equipment. So the RT 1 Instagram page is where you need to be, at RT Radio 1. Which brings us nicely on to this.
Operation Transformation on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Healthy Ireland. Helping you keep well.
Yeah, Operation Transformation continues tonight. It's getting to the business end of it, as they say in GAA, at 9.35. On the line, we have Susanna Comalafi, who's one of the leaders. How are you doing, Susanna?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Ray?
Good to talk to you. And we also have Aoife Hearn. How are you doing, Aoife?
Hi Ray, I'm great. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you. Now, Susanna, for people who haven't been watching, first of all, why aren't you watching it? Secondly, you've had a tough couple of weeks, haven't you?
I did, yes. A couple of weeks, yeah. The meet up with my target.
So you've actually put on weight over the last couple of weeks?
Not really. I have a pound. That's not too much.
No. I suppose what they'd say is it's going in the wrong direction. Anyway, without giving away too much, it's good news. It's good news tonight.
Totally really good news. And, you know, it's just, it was something you've been waiting for, and it just happened. So that's fantastic. Yeah.
but I'm always interested in how do you feel as opposed to what it says on the weighing scale. So how do you feel?
I feel actually really lighter. I think I'm falling in. I'm beginning to have like a figure eight, you know what I mean? I'm losing. I can see and I can feel that I'm losing a lot of the body fat myself. I feel so anyway. You know, I feel very good with myself, very light, very flexible in terms of, you know, my flexibility. But, yeah, and people are telling me that I'm actually really, I look as if I'm, you know, losing some of those fat in my body.
Yeah.
But it's not just coming off the, you know, it's just not showing in the weighing, but.
Yes.
Thankful to God it was this week, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll bring Aoife in now. How are you doing, Aoife, again?
Hi, Ray.
So, Susanna, we know you're originally from Africa. And yeah. So different diets. And Susanna has been introducing African food into her diet. Has that caused you a bit of hardship?
No, not at all. I like learning new things. It's actually been nice to learn about different. You know, I'm really interested in food culture, actually. And so it's nice to, you know, now look at how Susanna can bring in some of her traditional foods, which she absolutely wants to do and wouldn't probably be a normal part of the food plan, right? So we're looking to see how she can do that. And she had one of her traditional meals this week, her jollof rice. I'm hoping she'll cook it for me sometime.
Yeah.
So you... Because it's important that you sort of reiterate this, Aoife. It is for an awful lot of people, it's about portion size, isn't it? I remember a few years ago in Operation Transformation, you were on here and you're on the telly encouraging people to get smaller plates.
Yeah, definitely. Our plate sizes have expanded an awful lot in the last 10 years or so. And, you know, the bigger the plate are, the more we fill it. So, you know, being mindful of portion sizes is obviously a big part of eating well and then also losing weight. And, you know, I think just even using the plate as your guide, again, can be a good way of monitoring your portions, making sure that we're seeing lots of colour, lots of vegetables on our plate and less starchy food. What we're looking for.
Yeah. It's not a brilliant line there. I'm wondering if we can maybe try and get a better line for you there. I'll go back to Susanna. Susanna, and tonight we see you with Eddie in a gazebo or a bandstand, and you have it. It looks very cosy.
No, it looks so cosy. It was a nice location. It was calm, you know, cool, you know, and I was treated like a queen. You know, I was kept warm all through the time,
yes,
even though we were outside. So that was exciting. And it was good to see him come around and just for us to just explore it, you know, just dig a little bit deep into what could have, if there's anything else, apart from the fact, you know, that might be going on, that could affect the way I lose weight or my attitude or my mindset towards changing my whole entire fitness and becoming healthy. So, yeah, that was really good to be able to do that, yeah.
Because people who've been watching will know your story, but you used to lecture in your home country, and then when you came to Ireland, you worked as a care assistant, and you sort of met with, I suppose, racism in your workplace from the people you were caring for.
Yeah, at the early stage, I was saying to Ed there that at the early stage, there was, you know, this kind of comments around, oh, I don't want you to touch me, you know, I don't want that one to touch me, you know, all those kind of comments. And you know, sometimes you tend to feel like, you've been professionally, you know, you can't really respond back to it. But sometimes it gets to you because, you know, you are just coming there to do your job and you want to just give the best to it. And then you come in and somebody is trying to send you back home. And saying, oh, I don't want you to touch me. I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to do that. It took a while to just accept those kind of things. But I was lucky because the company I was actually working with then, they were based in Belfast. So they started this new, they recruited us. We were one of their four staff that was recruited in Ireland at that time. And 90% of their staff were all African. So they just couldn't avoid not to use us. So even when the client says, oh, they don't want, so what they tell us is that if you go there and they don't allow you to touch them, just come back. And then they will contact them and say, look, we don't have any other staff. That is the only person we have. So if you're happy with that, they're well-trained, they're professionals, they know what they're doing. And in so many cases, we've seen people, you know, just reluctantly accept. And then with time, you get to understand why they do that. Because what I discovered that most of those people we're working with, they've been isolated for years. They've been in their house. They've not been going into the community. Some of them for 5, 10 years. Different people have been coming into the house to care for them.
Yes. And of course, Ireland was a white country.
Before you came in, the last person they saw was a fellow Irish person that they've been seeing for quite a long time. Yeah. And then one day, you knock at the door, you're coming to give them their own personal care, not just a domestic work. It is a personal care whereby a lot of the intimates, you do things that, you know, that is all they've done in their life, and you're coming to do all those kind of things to support them. So you can understand how the attitude towards, like, you're totally a strange person. But what is surprising is that you never find any man saying that. I have to say that.
Listen, Susanna, people will see you having that chat with Eddie tonight, and Aoife is there as well, Operation Transformation, 9:35. And just a reminder that you can register for the Operation Transformation 5K, which is happening Thursday, Friday and Saturday of next week. And it's a virtual thing, and people from all over the world are signing up. And if you want to sign up, rte.ie/OT.
Operation Transformation on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Healthy Ireland. Helping you keep well.
Sorry about those lines. That's the way the telecommunication systems work. Some days you get good lines. Sometimes you get not so good lines. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.